Apollo 13 opens tomorrow. I guess Ron Howard couldn't have asked for better timing. Today, Russian and American astronauts met in space after the space shuttle Atlantis docked with the Soviet space station Mir. Apollo 13 is the first feature film in which space scenes were actually filmed in a jet that simulates the weightlessness of space. I spoke with Ron Howard this morning, and he told me about that jet they filmed in.
It's a KC-135, which is a sort of a military version of a 707. So it's large, but not huge. Since 1959, they've been flying on a regular basis, parabolic flights.
What does that mean?
It's kind of like it's a sort of a half loop in the sky. It's kind of like a roller coaster, climbing up and then diving.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it takes place over miles between roughly 31,000 feet and I think 38 or 39,000 feet out over the Gulf of Mexico is where they usually do it. And just before they reach the top of that roll, it sort of throws, you know, the individuals and everything else that's inside the plane that isn't tied down up. And then the pilot starts to fly this curve and everything's rendered weightless, essentially. And they can maintain that weightless simulation for about 23 seconds. So no one's ever filmed under these conditions. Nobody's ever gone up there and you know, chartered the plane and tried to, you know, set up shots and shoot a movie or a television show that way. We gained permission first for a test flight. And, you know, we thought of it as an opportunity for us to see whether we could even function in the environment. I later realized that NASA was also testing us to see how professional we'd be, how seriously we were going to take it, and whether they felt we'd be putting ourselves at risk in some way. We had to pass physical tests. We had to take, you know, a classroom and written tests. It was very, very involved. Had to take out vast amounts of insurance. We went up and did our trial run. And when it was over, we realized that while it was somewhat uncomfortable, we could do it. We could film there. And NASA went ahead and gave us the approval.
So you had, about 23 seconds of weightlessness?
Per parabola.
Per parabola. So what was the interval between each parabola?
Well, usually you do them in sequences of, you know, 4 or 6 or 8. And you'd set up a shot and you'd run through it several times without changing anything. Sometimes you'd set up 2 or 3 shots in a row and do them all in a sequence with really no hesitating in between. In between the parabolas, everything gets kind of pinned to the floor because the plane is pulling 2 G's, either going into the maneuver or out of it. So
2 G's is a gravity term?
Yes, yeah. We're 1 G just you know, sitting here on Earth, and so 2 G's means that there's everything weighs twice as much. And in some instances, it goes to more than 2 G's. So, you know, it's not unbearable. Your face doesn't distort or anything, but you're sort of pressed to the floor. You feel the pressure. If somebody lands on top of you, you know, they weigh 360 instead of 180. It took a lot of planning, and we really couldn't afford to eat up any of our flight time. Each flight was about 2.5-3 hours long, with discussion and rehearsal. So all that happened on the ground ahead of time.
Give us a sense of what one of the shots was that you did in a 23-second interval.
Well, we would do things that you could never achieve on a soundstage with normal gravity. You know, interacting with floating props. For example, we'd start off with a shot. The command module, which is where they go to launch, is connected by a tunnel to the lunar module, which only exists for landing on the moon. Okay, so you've got a capsule, then you've got a little tunnel, and then you've got the LEM or the lunar module. And after the crisis, they opened up the lunar module so they could have a little more living space, and they also wound up using it as a kind of a lifeboat. So I would take a, you know, let's say two of the actors, or actronauts, as we like to call them, were, let's say they were still in the command module, where it was now dark and really cold, because in the story they had to shut, they had to turn off all their power and conserve every bit of power for their reentry. And let's say Tom Hanks, playing Jim Lovell, is in the lunar module. Now, a thing you could never, ever do on a soundstage is start an actor in the lunar module, let him float around, going through the tunnel, you see, because you can't really turn a corner like that on wires, flip upside down, do a corkscrew while going through the tunnel. The camera is going through the tunnel with the actor, coming back around, following the actor as he goes into the scene, revealing the other two actors, the actronauts, who are in the command module, who are also floating. Now, and meanwhile, we'd have things interact, you know, props and things floating around inside the scene. Well, a shot like that could never be done, or if you were determined to do it, it would probably cost, you know, $800,000 or $900,000 to do. We would just do it. We'd plan it. We'd go up, and that would be one of 10 shots that we were doing on that mission, on that flight.
Now, where did you put yourself as a director? Did you just strap yourself down?
No, I didn't, because I needed to be able to move around to see and also give direction. We had monitors attached to each camera, and running over to a couple of little, you know, sort of like Sony Watchmans, and they were black and white, so it was imperfect. But I'd be floating off to the side, either trying to peek around the corner and look inside the set, or watching to see what each camera had. Because as soon as we pulled out of one of these shots, I had to either yell out, "Go again," or "We got it." If it was "We got it," then I'd yell out a number. I'd say, "Okay, shot six," and everybody would know what shot six was, and jump into that. Usually, we would do two or three or four parabolas per shot. Everybody was very efficient. You know, we had to take advantage of every moment that we had up on this aircraft, and we wound up making about twice as many zero gravity shots than had initially been budgeted and planned, because the crew and the actors could endure it.
You were working with a lot of floating props, as you said, and one of those floating props was floating fake vomit, because one of the astronauts in an early scene is very sick, and that's one of the effects of weightlessness. Did you also have the real thing to contend with while you were shooting?
Well, we did, not quite to the extent that we feared we might, so that was a huge relief. We were, and space sickness is something that, of course, none of the astronauts really talk about, but, somebody said that almost half the astronauts feel very sick before they get acclimated in the zero-G environment. So naturally, I wanted to depict it. One of the camera operators, for example, did throw up all over Bill Paxton right in the middle of a shot at one point. And Bill was... He was thrilled about it. He wore it like a badge of honor. Most of us got queasy from time to time, and I don't think any of the actors actually threw up. Gary Sinise did on one of the training flights. One training flight, Tom Hanks chose not to use the medicine to see how he would do without it. A concoction called Scope Dex, part scopolamine and part dexedrine, and without it, he was really incapacitated, but some people would take the Scope Dex and feel awful, so the doctors told us that it really had to do with your body chemistry, you know, given that particular day, and that, you know, there was no real pattern. While the Scope Dex seemed to help most people most of the time, there were no guarantees. I know that I felt sickest on my very first flight and on my next to last flight. So it was an unpredictable thing, and, you know, I had to do a real song and a dance to get the studio to go along with this thing. You know, nobody's ever done it, and I don't think people really believed we would go up and get much usable footage. I was really concerned that I would drag the crew there, arrange for all this, and come back with you know, sort of little or nothing to show for it. But it turned out to be the opposite.
I want to get back to, was it the cameraman who threw up on Bill Paxton?
Yeah.
That must have ruined your shoot because, he'd have to change his clothes and, you know, here you are in this special jet that's simulating weightlessness, and you're paying $1 zillion for every minute you're up there. So did it ruin the day?
Well, fortunately, it was the last shot. Josh, the camera operator, had been, you know, sick the entire flight and held on, and just, you know, we lost a couple of parabolas as a result. Or I think actually we went and shot something else while Bill tried to dry off. But everybody did three jobs or four jobs up there. You know, the actors were wrangling their own props. There was one electrician / lighting expert and one grip. They were all doing everything. They were also working with cameras and helping to reload and wrangling the props and working with the special effects up there. It was highly coordinated and really exhilarating, because movies are 100 years old this year. And this is probably the only time any of us are ever going to be able to say that we were involved in a first in our field of endeavor.
Is this a first you'd like to make a second? Would you ever do it again?
Yeah, I'd like to become the zero-G director. anybody wants a TV commercial in zero-G, just call Ron.
My guest is Ron Howard. He directed the new film Apollo 13. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Ron Howard, director of the new film Apollo 13. He shot some of the space scenes in a jet that simulates weightlessness in 23-second intervals. I asked him if he had to do some tricky editing to make those short takes into larger scenes.
It took a lot of planning ahead of time and a lot of storyboarding, which, you know, you can only adhere to so much. And we did film on the stage a lot too. What we did up on the airplane, because it was risky. So we only did wide shots and scenes where the actronauts would be interacting with floating props and things that would really make it worthwhile. Back on the stage, we did a lot of close-ups that had to match into that. And Dean Cundy, the cinematographer, did a remarkable job of creating a lighting approach that could actually work within the real confines of this aircraft, because we didn't have much room at all once we put our spacecraft set in there. And then being able to match that on the stage. The other reason we had to film some of it on the stage is that, as I mentioned earlier, during the mission, they turned off all the power, including the heating, and the temperature dropped to around 34 degrees in the spacecraft, and actually froze in a couple of other areas. And their food locker froze and things like that. So we had to cool the sound stages down. We cooled two stages down to around 34, 35 degrees, and we kept it that way for about a month and filmed and under those conditions.
So you had to turn the temperature on the set down to the mid-30s to simulate the cold conditions that they were experiencing in space.
In order to see their breath. Which is still imperfect, because in some shots you don't see it. But when it is backlit, you notice it. And I thought it was significantly, I thought it was actually crucial to trying to create an experience for the audience. You know, a lot of people kind of know, you know, they know how this story came out. It's an historic event. And yet I wanted it to be as suspenseful a film as it could be. And I knew that suspense was going to have to be generated more by sort of identification with what the individuals were going through.
I've seen my share of liftoffs on television, you know, through television news. Mm-hmm. And the liftoff you show at the beginning of Apollo 13 has just a lot more impact and crunching and noise than you get a sense of when you watch, the TV news of
right.
the liftoff. What did you see to base that on, and then maybe you could give us a sense of how you executed it?
Well, during our research, I was lucky enough to get to watch a shuttle launch. I think it was February of last year, and it was an amazing experience. I mean, witnessing it live, even from 3 miles away, was a total experience. It was visceral. You felt it. The sound waves rolled across the 3 miles, and that separated you, and suddenly started to pound you in the chest. And it was very, very moving. And I really wanted to try to recreate that that experience for audiences in a theater.
The shots that you created, were there real rockets, or are those like little rockets that are special effects things made to look real large?
They're sort of in between. They're very large scale models. I think they were 10 or 12 feet, and maybe even 20 feet, one of them. They used several different rockets models, and some of the fire is real fire, some of it's computer generated. Some of the ice tumbling off is real ice, some of it's computer generated. A very sophisticated special effects sequence. Very sophisticated.
Do you know what your next movie is going to be?
I don't. I'll tell you what, Apollo 13 has been such an intense and extraordinary experience, and I was talking to Tom Hanks about this the other day, that it is really very difficult to let go of this one emotionally. And, I don't want to sound corny, but it really was a kind of a once-in-a-lifetime project, and certainly I'm not going to be paralyzed by this. I'm going to find another movie to do because I love to make movies. But I have not chosen, and I'm going to have to take a little time and sort of disengage from Apollo 13. It's just such an amazing life experience.
Ron Howard, thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Ron Howard directed the new film Apollo 13. It opens tomorrow. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.